Right now on the Ringer Gambling Feed and all throughout the entire month of August, the East Coast Bias Boys are getting you ready to bet the NFL this season. We're going through each and every single division and revealing our favorite futures, predicting division winners, and even giving you some award winners. Do we think the Kansas City Chiefs will repeat or will they be dethroned? Tune in now to find out on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Howdy. Welcome to the Ringer NFL Show. It's the Herbert boys. It's just the big old Herbies in the building. I'm Ben Solek. He's Stephen Ruiz. And Los Angeles Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert has signed an extension. And they put us on the mic, Stephen, because they knew if they didn't let us, we would just hop on the call anyway to spread the propaganda, the good news of Justin Herbert. Yesterday, it's announced the weird era for extensions. Training camp is reporting, and just like everybody's getting extensions right now, that Justin Herbert has come to terms with the Chargers on a 5-year extension. Nuts and bolts of the contract. $262.5 million in total value. Healthy. At a 5-year extension, that puts him at an average annual value of 52.5. He's making 52.5 a year, just over the 52 million that Lamar Jackson was making on his 5-year deal, which is just over the 51 million that Jalen Hurts was making on his 5-year deal. Just to get good on how quarterback contracts work, $218.7 million in guaranteed money. That is the makes Herbert only the second quarterback to have over 200 million in total guarantees to only Deshaun Watson. Steven, when you saw the news, first thoughts?
I hope he buys me some ice cream or so. Buys us some ice cream. takes his kids out for a treat.
Just 0.01%, Herbert. That's all I need. Just a cool 20K. Just swing that my way.
But no, I was like straining to come up with like some like highly analytical tweet about it. And I just like, it doesn't matter. Like, he's worth the money. It's the same conversation whenever we talk about these top of the league quarterbacks. I think the most interesting discussion is when like a guy like Derek Carr becomes the highest paid quarterback, or like even Matthew Stafford, who I think is kind of is on the precipice of being an elite quarterback. But with these guys, I mean, the stats, the analytics show us that these guys are probably still underpaid. Like, Patrick Mahomes might be the most underpaid player in the NFL now. And now it's probably the case. In a couple years, I don't think anyone will be worried about what kind of restrictions this puts on the Chargers cap. Mm-hmm. It, for me, it's a no-brainer. I don't even know. Like, should we even be here? Should we just go home? Let's just end the pod here and just go. Good deal, guys.
Business as usual. Well done, Tom Telesco. This has been the Ringer NFL Show. Yeah, so you brought up Derek Carr, which I think is always a good reminder. And our dear friend Kevin Clark tweeted this out. Always important to remember that in 2017, Derek Carr became the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, highest paid player in the NFL, with a $125 million extension over 5 years, which is half of what Justin Herbert just got. That's $25 million per year over 5 years. Justin Herbert just got $52.5 million. Over 5 years, right? That's like in 6 years, top quarterback contracts have doubled, which is a enormous deal. It is reflective of the value of the position, but has also led to discourse around like, hey, do you really want to be paying your quarterback this much, right? During the Dak Prescott contract negotiations, there was always that line from Jerry Jones that was like, no Super Bowl champion has ever won with their quarterback making more than 15% of the cap. That's obviously no longer true. It was then. Patrick Mahomes has just won a Super Bowl while making 15% of the cap. That argument, that conversation, I think deserves a moment to be addressed. And Chargers GM Tom Telesco addressed it. He said, this is from Daniel Popper's piece on The Athletic, "I don't believe in rookie quarterback windows. If you look at the playoffs this year, at least 10 teams had quarterbacks not on rookie deals. The team that I used to work with," he's referring to the Peyton Manning Colts, if memory serves. "The team that I used to work with, we had a high-paid quarterback for over 10 years, and we built the team just fine around him. You have to build it differently, but certainly you can do it. I don't see that we only have a year or two window with this quarterback's contract. It's not how I look at it at all. I just think that's a really bad narrative." Now, rookie quarterback windows definitely exist. Like, there's no way they don't. Right. I would ask Tom Telesco where he found the money to give massive deals to Khalil Mack and J.C. Jackson, if not for a rookie contract quarterback window. But his larger point, which is that this contract, that we've signed with Herbert does not preclude us from building a competing team. Right. We might have to think about it a little bit differently, but we can still do it. I think it's very well taken.
No, yeah, I totally agree with him. And if I was a guy who kind of squandered one of the best quarterbacks' rookie contracts, I would also say, well, yeah, rookie contracts are fake. Like, who cares? Like, whatever. Like, I would do that too. But I agree with him, and especially with, like I just said, a guy like this, like it's not going to matter. They're going to find there's just too many tools, too many options to be able to work around cap hits where like it rarely becomes an issue, especially if you have a good cap guy in your front office. I'm not sure the Chargers do, but they seem to. They've had an expensive roster for the last couple of years, and it doesn't seem to be prohibiting them from doing anything roster.
Yeah. And I think we should always emphasize, because this is the case with pretty much all quarterback extensions, and certainly is the case with Herbert, that when a quarterback gets this five-year extension, $52.5 million, it's easy to think, okay, right now this season, Herbert's hitting the Chargers for $52.5 million. That's not the case, right? This was a five-year extension, which means it was tacked on to the end of Herbert's existing contract, right? Herbert, who was drafted in 2020, was under contract with the Chargers for 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023. That's the 4 years of the four-year deal. And then he could have had a fifth-year option tagged on, and the Chargers would have absolutely picked that up if they got to that point. So the 5 years starts in 2025. It starts after that fifth-year option would have been picked up and then goes all the way into 2029. Accordingly, Justin Herbert's overall cap hit for 2023 is $8.46 million, which is exactly what it would have been if he didn't sign an extension. His 2024 cap hit is under $20 million, which is lower than it would have been if the Chargers picked up his fifth-year option. Part of this contract structure gave the Chargers some cap relief in 2024, which is something they need because they have really big veteran restructure monies for guys like Keenan Allen and like Khalil Mack. And they have a huge contract like J.C. Jackson, Corey Linsley. They have some accounting to do because they're currently over the 2024 cap as is projected. So Herbert does not represent a like big cap hit until 2025, which is only $37.3 million, which isn't even that big to begin with anyway, right? That's not even that large. So he's under contract through 2029, at which point he would be 31. Now, there are some huge cap hits at the end of this deal, 46.4 in 26, 58.3, 71.1 in the following seasons. But a lot of those huge cap hits are the results of really big base salary figures, which means either Herbert will be playing extremely well and they will restructure him to lower the cap hits, or Herbert will be playing extremely poorly, be hurt, be messed up, and they will get off of the contract, right? So like the way 2028 looks right now is not the way 2028 is actually going to look in the future. So in general, like the numbers sound enormous, but when you start getting them down to brass tacks, Herbert's contract is not going to become like laborious for the Chargers until maybe 2026, maybe three plus seasons from now. And even then, if he keeps this level of play, like it's not going to be too much of an issue.
And even then, that's based on the current salary cap. Like Josh Allen in 2028 is probably going to be making like a literal bajillion dollars. Like the salary cap is going to be huge. Quarterbacks, the quarterback market is not slowing down.
I love Josh Allen's contract as an example for this because everybody remembers like Josh Allen signed a huge extension, right? Like is one of the things that started this whole nonsense was the Josh Allen extension. You know what Josh Allen's cap hit is this year?
No idea.
It's $18.6 million. Like
pretty modest.
Like
Teddy Bridgewater signing in Carolina.
Right. He like signed a huge extension in like 2021. And like the cap hit has not really even started kicking the Bills' butts yet, which as an aside, is one of the reasons why I love whenever Brandon Bean is like, well, it's hard to beat the Bengals because they have Joe Burrow and he's cheap and Josh Allen isn't. It's like, is he? Is he? Because the cap is pretty low there, Brandon. Regardless, it is important to understand that when we say a five-year extension and this figure, this money, a lot of that money is going to be funny money late in the contract, and it's not going to hit the cap right away. So the Chargers can still solve their cap problems in 2024 and still be aggressive in free agency. With that said, the one thing that Herbert really, the ground that he really broke on this contract is money earned cash flow after the first year of the new deal, right? This is the thing that's kind of got all the cap boys on Twitter freaking out. By the end of his first year of the new deal, 2025, Herbert will have earned $100 million in new money. That's the first time we've ever seen a triple-digit figure for that metric, right? For cash flow after the first year of the deal. Lamar Jackson was the previous record setter with his new contract at $80 million. So it's a huge jump. And this is something that again, like the cap nerds think is going to continue to become a more important metric. It's like, okay, how much new money am I getting in the early part of this contract, which is a bone you throw to players in response to and you know, kind of in balance to putting huge base salaries at the end of the contract to make the numbers look good when everybody really knows you're not actually going to see that base salary. And so Herbert making $100 million in new money over the next 3 years. Congratulations to our son, Justin. There's a quarterback we haven't mentioned that deserves mentioning. His name is Joseph Burrow. May have heard of him in Cincinnati. This is going to be year four of Justin Herbert's career, Tua Tagovailoa's career, and Joe Burrow's career. You're only eligible for an extension after year three. Jalen Hurts in there as well. And so Hurts and Burrow and Herbert and Tua all became available for an extension this offseason. And the Bengals have been staring down this barrel for quite some time because the Bengals don't have huge cash flow, huge cash reserves the way other owners do. So it's a little bit more challenging for them in terms of how they structure their contracts because of like money they have to put in escrow and guaranteed money and CBA stuff that we don't have to get into. Just long and short of it, it's a little bit harder for the Bengals to sign mega deals the way other teams do. And that's why you see the Bengals, like the Orlando Brown deal is like enormous guarantees in year one. No more guaranteed money in year two or beyond. It's a weird structure because the Bengals kind of have weird circumstances. There was an expectation that the Bengals would try to get Burrow's extension done before Jalen Hurts' deal and before Justin Herbert's deal to try to, you know, set the record, be the biggest quarterback contract for a month, and then let Hurts beat them and then let Herbert beat them so that they could keep Burrow's number maybe a little bit lower. They obviously did not pull that off. And now Burrow's the guy sitting and waiting for an extension. He's absolutely going to come in above Justin Herbert. He's absolutely going to come in above Jalen Hurts. I don't think the Herbert extension makes this like remarkably more challenging for the Bengals. It's still the same problem that it was. But it's worth noting that like Burrow's the only guy left. Like Tua's not getting a huge extension anytime soon. He has to prove that he can stay healthy. Burrow's just the one sitting here waiting on this deal. And the longer it goes, the more awkward it gets. And so we're like, the danger meter is nowhere near in the red. It's still in the green, but it's kind of starting to flick up towards the yellow a little bit in terms of the Burrow and his future with the Bengals.
I do think like this contract structure lays out a blueprint, a potential blueprint for the Bengals if they want to deviate from what they usually do, which, and I think when it comes to Joe Burrow, it makes sense to deviate from your typical operation. But the reason why we keep saying like he's making all this money after 2025 is because they have the signing bonus, they have the option bonus, and they have like a second option bonus. And basically those are staggered. So they're paying him his signing bonus up front now, they're paying him his first option bonus next year, and then his third one in 2025. And then that's when he gets the sum of that $100 million.
Which is the same structure for the Lamar Jackson extension was signing bonus into option bonus into option bonus. The Jalen Hurts extension, signing bonus into option bonus, into option bonus, into, I think, a third option bonus and fourth overall bonus or something like that. Anyways, bananas.
But I think like the Bengals can manage that. I don't know Mike Brown's finances, but I feel like he can muster like $33 million 3 years in a row, hopefully. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think it might be drawn out. I do think like the fact that you have like Jamar Chase and T. Higgins there, and there's just always this question mark about how do you keep them all? I think in the end, all three sign. I think it just makes too much sense. I know like if any team is going to do that, it's a Mike Brown team. Like if any team's going to break up that trio, it's a Mike Brown team. But we've seen like the Colts keep together three Hall of Fame players with Peyton, Reggie Wayne, and Marvin Harrison. Like I don't think it's out of the question there. I do think it's interesting, like the timing. I think the timing with Jalen Hurts going first has everything to do with the fact that he wasn't a first round pick. There was a built-in sense of urgency because you only get 4 years. You don't get that fifth year option. The Eagles can bring him to the negotiating table right away. And he's making less money than these other guys while producing at a similar level. And with Herbert, I don't think it was like a big deal to dole out this like huge contract just because you have Dean Spanos and like he has money. Like these guys have money. It's not a mom and pop team like it is in Cincinnati. But I think like even so, they're going to get a deal done. And I really don't think it's going to be one. It's going to be the same conversation I had at the top. Like he's Joe Burrow. He's good enough to justify this money. Who cares? Just give him whatever.
Yeah. we are going to sell things to you with advertisements. You're going to purchase them, and then we're going to come back and we're going to make Steven justify the Chargers giving an extension to someone who's never won a playoff game. Yeah, Steven, I don't know if you heard, Justin Herbert blew a 27-point playoff lead. It was all him. It had nothing to do with the other players on the field. But in all seriousness, among the guys who I think we would say are like the young elite dudes, like let's toss like Rodgers out for a second because he's old, and just like Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Lamar, Herbert, being put Hurts in there if you want. All of those dudes have like attended Super Bowls and or championship games in the case of Josh Allen, slash won MVPs in the case of like Lamar, right? And then you have Herbert there who just hasn't won an MVP and hasn't won a playoff game, and the Chargers have not enjoyed team success. We've talked a ton over our time at the Ringer, which I think oddly coincides with like Justin Herbert's career arc, you and I, about how the offense has held him back and what they needed to do on the offensive line and general Chargers despair and bad luck and accursedness. Do you like what registers to you in terms of giving this huge contract to Herbert without like the postseason success or the award success? Does it like increase the pressure on him to succeed this year? Does it put Brandon Staley in a spot where if the Chargers aren't good this year, like Staley has to go because they've made this clear, emphatic endorsement of Herbert as the guy? Like, what does it change for you in terms of Chargers perspective?
Like in terms of like the pressure put on him, I think there's going to be more scrutiny, but
it's already been a lot.
There's already been a lot. And like the first thing I want to address is like we're talking about the excuses, quote unquote, that we've given to him, like with the offensive scheme and the offensive line. I mean, I guess, but what are we excusing exactly? He's still been like statistically over the first 3 years of his career, he's doing stuff that only Dan Marino and Peyton Manning have done. He's still been like a top five quarterback statistically. I understand the win-loss record, but here's the thing. There's like seasons are individual. He went 6-10 or whatever his first year. That's the reason his record is bad. They went 9-8 the year after that and barely missed the playoffs. They missed the playoffs because they couldn't get a stop against the Raiders. Do you want to know what happened the next week? A certain other 2020 quarterback won a game because his defense got a stop against the Raiders, but we'll leave that alone. They went 10-8 or whatever last year, despite him having broken ribs in the entire offense.
Can you go 10-8? Is that because they were 10-7 and then they lost?
10-7.
That's yeah. I'm just trying to remember how many games it changes every year. Yeah.
It was a mistake. I did mean 10-7, but they did go 10-8 because they lost the playoff game. But anyway, I went back and watched. And let's just address the 27-point blown lead. They had four drives in the second half. He led them to a field goal on like a 14-play drive and then a missed field goal. I think I had to switch. He led them to a field goal, and then the 14-play drive, they missed the field goal. Fourth drive, he gets sacked on the first play instantly. It's 2nd-17. They get it to, 4th-3, and Brandon Staley punts. Like, I don't even know how this is on him. He threw three passes. Okay, with 8:58 left in the fourth quarter, the Chargers were up 10 points. Justin Herbert had three dropbacks after that. What did you want him to do with those three dropbacks?
Cover Christian Kirk.
Like, this
get out
is
there,
just, like,
get out there and press Evan Ingram.
And I tweeted this out before we came on and recorded. Do you ever notice that any tweet or any piece of criticism aimed towards Justin Herbert never includes like some film examples or meaningful individual stats? Never, because mm-hmm. they aren't out there, because he is producing. Like, you could say we're making an excuse for him. We're not making an excuse for him. We're putting the stats that are very good already into context. We're saying he's doing this in spite of all the shit that's going on around him. So there's no need to defend anything with him. And they put up 30 points. I know the defense really helped out, but they still put up 30 points. I don't know. I also think, like, I mean, Jalen Hurts, he beat Daniel Jones and a quarterback who literally couldn't throw a football to get to the Super Bowl. Did he play extremely well in that Super Bowl? Yes, he did. But he needed that that Giants game wasn't that great for him, and he obviously had a terrible game against the Bucks.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be about like Burrow lost to the Raiders the week after the Chargers.
No, it doesn't.
Or Burrow beat the Raiders and it hurts. But no, but I want
you brought them up though.
Yes, as a bit. because that's what like other people bring up. And that's how this gets contextualized for I think a lot of people watching this, where it's just like, how can you have Herbert over Burrow when Burrow's been in a big back-to-back AFC championship games and Herbert hasn't won a playoff game? And that's like a fair and legitimate question. I think that the way that you get like Herbert above Burrow, which I'm not like, I don't know if I'm Herbert above Burrow. I know that Herbert was above Burrow for you on your like quarterback rankings end last season. I don't know where you land still, but the way that you get there is by excising how the player performs and taking it just for itself, taking it just in terms of film, taking it just in terms of metrics and performance indicators that we think isolate the quarterback position and not folding it into team success. That is part of like analysis. That's how we get like things like, you know, like, all right, this team's not performing super well right now, but they're going to be fine down the stretch. That's how we get things like, hey, yeah, the Vikings are 8-1 currently, but the Vikings aren't actually 8-1. This is a made up team. This is not real. This is not happening. Which is good analysis. It is good predictive work. And I think that like the reason why the Chargers gave Herbert a record setting extension and nobody batted an eye and everybody was like, yes, of course, is because we all know that wins aren't a quarterback stat. You can pull quarterback performance out from team performance and say, this guy's the guy. With that said, they don't give Lombardi trophies out for good quarterback performance opposite of, like, independent of team success.
No,
right?
They don't.
The guy that hosts, the guy that lifts that trophy at the end of the year is the guy on the team that won all the games. And so the Chargers had the best competitive advantage in professional football. They had an elite quarterback on a rookie contract, and they couldn't get the job done in terms of getting to the divisional round, right? Let alone, you know, actually making a run. Herbert's cap hit is low for the next couple of years, but again, people aren't going to be thinking about it that way. People are now going to be thinking about him as a quarterback on an extension. This is now a veteran quarterback. This is a guy that you've said emphatically is an elite dude. You have to be able to start producing some team success or heads are going to roll, right? And it won't be Herbert. It'll be Staley and Telesco. And that's the corner you paint yourself in. And it's a nice corner to be in. It's a great corner to paint yourself into because Justin Herbert's there with you. That's awesome. But you have to understand, like, the Chargers have had to deliver for seasons now. This is not in breaking news, but it still deserves to be said. The Chargers really got to freaking deliver, man. He's a very good quarterback. You got to win some games out here.
Right. The pressure isn't necessarily on Herbert. I feel like the pressure is on the Chargers to continue to build around him in a way that's more efficient than they have been. Like, yes, their roster seems to be good. I think their roster is really overrated. And maybe this is just me being like a Justin Herbert apologist or whatever, but like Khalil Mack, like who are the names you name when you're really boasting up the Chargers roster? It's like Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, two guys like that Rashawn really haven't Slater, been on the field.
Yeah.
Rashawn Slater, who wasn't on the field last year.
Dude, when I was looking at their contract structures for the next couple of years, and at the top of every single list, I kept on seeing J.C. Jackson's contract. I was like, dude, J.C. Jackson's on the Chargers? I had completely forgotten this was a thing, which is not good.
And the thing is, like, he was injured last year, sure, but he was benched before he got injured.
Yeah.
He was played poorly for a month before he got injured or whatever, however many weeks it was. I don't think the pressure is necessarily on Herbert. Obviously, he has to continue on this pace. He has to improve. He has to keep pace with Patrick Mahomes. He has to keep pace with Josh Allen. The two quarterbacks that I think are squarely above him in the quarterback rankings or the quarterback hierarchy right now. I did have Herbert at number two, but that's just because Josh Allen kind of tailed off towards the end and had the elbow, and that was factored in. But I think a healthy Josh Allen is a better player. I think that's the pressure that he's probably already putting on himself before he signed this deal. But like financially, I don't think it much changes for him. But I agree with you. Obviously, he has to start winning. Like, but
yeah,
it's not like a thing. It's not like he has to change something. Yes, I agree. Justin Herbert hasn't won enough, but that's a statement about the Chargers. Why haven't you won more with Justin Herbert? It's not a statement about him. I don't think, because what are the things that quarterbacks do that lead to wins? Like, it's avoiding negative plays, making explosive plays when the opportunity is there, and playing just generally efficient football. And Justin Herbert checks all three boxes. And oh, by the way, he's this 6'5 robot who can throw the football a million yards and can take off and run if you let him.
Right. And the two things I would add in terms of like what quarterbacks do on winning teams, I would add create explosive plays, which has been a huge issue for the Chargers offense previously, but they tried to solve with the hiring of Kellen Moore. And like the more I think of it, wow, incredible.
Terrible.
The more I feel like Kellen Moore is like the single most important non-head coach, non-quarterback like change this year, just in terms of like if he's good, which I'm 79% sure he is, but there's a 21% of me that's still like, I don't know, this might look a little bit too much like the old offense. If he's there, he solves a lot of ills for them. So there's that, like just like more explosives, more downfield stuff, which like the Chargers were fine in, but the offense really limited them there. And then the other thing the quarterback does is game-winning drives. And Herbert has had three in his rookie season, which we forgot to mention this at the top. We should have mentioned this. Do you think Herbert would have this extension right now if a Chargers doctor didn't stab Tyrod Taylor in week two?
Be Tyrod, didn't it?
Yeah. Tyrod also needs a
with
cut.
With this loaded roster he would have been playing with.
But Tyrod also needs a cut, you know, not a cut in that sense. We cut off the contract. Three game-winning drives in his rookie season, and then five in 2021 and five in 2022. He has 10 fourth-quarter comebacks to his name in under 50 career starts. Like, he's been doing the thing, man. He really, really has. The Chargers got to be good. Like, it's just irritating at this point that they're not. It defies understanding and logic. To that end, I'm very excited to bring in my dear friend, who also regularly wears Chargers gear to normal podcasts and showed up with his Justin Herbert jersey onto this podcast. It's producer Eduardo Ocampo, who is a excellent producer. He's been doing Steven and I's Friday show for the entire offseason and was thrilled to wake up before working hours on the Pacific Coast to hop onto this podcast. Eduardo, what, like, on this conversation, Chargers stress, Chargers pressure, Chargers expectation, Herbert expectation, where do you land as a proud bearer of the powder blue?
Well, first off, thank you. We have to put all the pressure on Brandon Staley, Tom Telesco, because like you said, I don't think you can point to like the last 3 years and say that Herbert is part of the issue. And where you see that is the lack of depth. You can't have like Storm Norton, Foster Sorrell as your backup tackles and expect that when an unforeseen injury happens, that they can produce.
The pain in a man's voice when he says Storm Norton and Foster Sorrell.
I thought we had banned the word Storm Norton from this podcast. Those should be censored out whenever you say it.
You can't have your fifth wide receiver be, I forgot the name of it. Of
Michael him, Bandy. Don't say Michael Bandy.
Bandy, you can't have Michael Bandy on there. And I think that's probably been the biggest issue with the Telesco, like Staley era. I think they have invested a lot more in like their offensive line with like Matt Filer, obviously drafting Rashawn Slater. But there's a lot of like on the outside, like depth pieces where it hasn't really been translating. And especially when you look at the defense and that their Brandon Staley does have good game plans. But a lot of the times when you look at the results of the games, it's not the greatest. So
great game plans don't do enough to hide a Kenneth Murray. There's just there's a water's edge and Kenneth Murray is across it.
Definitely.
I cited a stat in my Herbert article. It was like it was from Arjun Menon. Telesco's draft record since like 2013, and they've drafted, I think it's five players who have signed a second contract with the team.
Yeah,
that's a long time, and I think it speaks to what Eduardo is talking about. Like, the roster is top heavy, and you've heard of all these guys. So I think like people who aren't really paying close attention to the team might be like, oh, this is a good roster. You could win a Super Bowl with this roster, but it's really top heavy and that top is really expensive and there's not a lot of depth. And you combine the injuries with a lack of depth and you get an underachieving team, which the Chargers have been the last couple of years.
Yeah. How pissed do y'all think Austin Eckler is? This poor guy, man. Like, Eckler's just doing everything he can to get deserved value out of the Chargers coffers, right? Like, this guy is catching 100 passes, man. Like, he absolutely deserves a pay bump. And the Chargers were like, dude, no. And he was like, all right, trade me. And the Chargers were like, yeah, but we need great compensation. And Eckler was like, right, that's the point. And then like all the running backs got together and were like, this is the worst, man. This sucks so much. This is terrible. And then Saquon Barkley took like 900,000 in incentives to sign with the Giants. And then the Chargers were like, Justin Herbert, do you want to hold $260 million? And Eckler's just, it's tough out there for a running back, man. It's tough out there for our boy.
I'm sure he's happy for his teammate, but he's probably punching the air a little bit.
Yeah.
Where are you as a fan though? Do you want them to give in to Eckler's demands? Or are you running backs don't matter pilled and you just ready to move on?
Probably the move is you give him like a 1 year extension, like at the end of this year, and you try to find someone like in the early to like mid rounds in the next draft. And I think that's probably what they're going to do. And that's probably, it's unfortunately like when we talk about the running back market, but that's probably like the more wise thing to do from a team building sense rather than, because Eckler's already like 28, 29 ish, I believe.
Yeah.
So inevitably the decline is going to start coming in, but it is sad when you do see 1,000 yard, like total scrimmage yards, receiving, rushing, and he's still struck 18 touchdowns like for like three straight years almost, and you can't really get that much of a pay bump. That is the unfortunate thing.
If I'm the Chargers, I'm like, I will let you take a picture with Justin Herbert's signing bonus. you don't get to go home with it, but you get to take a picture of it.
Yeah, Eckler, major free agents for the Chargers in 2024. Austin Eckler, Gerald Everett is their starting tight end. Offensive line is actually nicely really secure. The aforementioned Foster Sorrell is an exclusive rights free agent, so they can keep Foster if they need to. Austin Jackson, who is a free agent signing a defensive tackle for them. Kenneth Murray, Michael Davis, who's a outside corner for them. Other than that, the Chargers' like core is set. If they're going to win, they're going to win with Herbert, Bosa, Mack, Derwin, Slater, who he'll have an extension in a couple of years, and then Keenan, Mike Williams, and Quentin Johnston, which that should win you something. That really, really, really stinking should win you something. And we will see how the Chargers look through the season, and I'm certain we will bang our heads against the wall, screaming and wailing against this team. No one more so than Eduardo, who actually made the terrible life choice to root for them.
At least Joe Lombardi can't hurt us anymore. That's exactly the one thing.
He can still. He's the offensive coordinator in Denver. And I keep remembering that and being like, I got to watch the guy's offense again. And I'm not going to like it.
I can't wait for the Lombardi masterclass to keep the Chargers out of the playoffs.
that's going to happen. Yeah.
When do they play in week 18?
I don't know. I hope.
No.
Chargers Broncos schedule. They play December 10th and December 31st. Yeah, those are going to be some impactful games, dude.
Lombardi revenge game.
Revenge game. That's going to do it for us here on the Ringer NFL show. Thank you to Eduardo for hopping on the mic for us, as well as for his production. Thank you, of course, to Arjuna Rumgapol and Connor Nevins for their additional production supervision. He's been Steven Ruiz. I've been Ben Solak. We will be back for a Friday episode of the Ringer NFL show, the three of us, as we typically are. And then we'll get back on when Joe Burrow signs it for a ton of money. Thank you for listening.